Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
It's good. And the great thing about Charlie's story is, and I know a lot of that focused on his role here, but Charlie's influence outside of this church is substantially more than it is inside. The stuff he does in our community, volunteers at the Old River Farms, and he works a lot of groups from the schools, not just the kids, but the teachers and the faculty. The way he lives his life just sort of reaches into the lives of others and helps them. And one of the things that I want for us to understand as we think about the commission that God has given us, that Christ has given us, if you are a follower of Christ, the commission that Jesus has said to you is to go and make disciples. And a lot of us think that making disciples is something that we do inside the church, but really, making disciples is what we do outside as the church. And this is why to develop and understand this as-you-go mindset is so important to what we're trying to do. One of the things, I'm so excited about this season in our church, because there are so many things that are happening outside the church. We found this to be the most effective way to actually leverage the church for the sake of the world. A lot of times, you know, the old mindset is get everybody in here, let's have a bunch of programs and sign up things, and we just decided we want to do as much as we can to push outward at every opportunity that we have. And several things that have happened over the years, part of where I'm going to talk about this morning is the emphasis on those of you in the business community and sort of leadership roles in any capacity in organizations, businesses, and such. And I've been meeting with a lot of business leaders over the last couple of years. And I'll sit down with them and I'll ask them a couple of questions. Anybody who'll give me an hour of their time, I want to understand your business. I want to understand your philosophy of leadership and how you get people to do the things that they're doing. And I've been asking a couple of questions. I'll ask, can you help me understand how your business impacts the culture of the city that you are in? And depending on the size of the organization, I met with some folks from pretty large organizations, and they talk about it like this. They talk about it in terms of economic impact, the jobs, all these which we love. We're grateful for those things. They could talk about it in terms of sort of the political landscape, how they leverage their influence to get certain things done, and that's a part of it. And they talk about sort of their cultural impact. Some are really passionate about making sure that the arts get sponsored in some of the events that we have downtown and in various parts of our region, and sponsoring plays and sort of the theatrical elements of our culture, arts and other things, music. And then others talk about sports and how they get involved with Little League and sponsorships and even down to the colleges and how they understand how what they do impacts the culture in which we live. And then I ask them, what about the spiritual impact? What about the spiritual impact of your leadership in our city? And what inevitably happens is the question comes back to me, or the comment, the answer comes back to me is, well, Mike, what you do is making a difference. And what I want to do is go, what you are doing is making a difference. It's us. It's not me and our church. It's you as the church. And it's been so cool as I've been having this conversation. I've met more and more people who are in our church who have positions of influence. Some are big and some are small. And they look around and said, here's a need. How can I get involved and meet this need? Leveraging their businesses to actually make a difference in our community. Leveraging meetings and other things that they have just right in front of them. One of the things we've been doing as a church is we host the Global Leadership Summit. And this is a really intentional effort for our part, not just to sort of provide a platform or a place of some of the best leadership training that you will receive anywhere in the world. But really to start or to be a part of the conversation that I think is so important to how we leverage influence for the sake of other people in our city, in our region, in our world. I think it's such an important conversation. What we've done over the past few years is been able to have this conversation, been able to have this, this summit in order to sort of perpetuate this conversation. And one of the things we're going to be doing is following that, we had about 600 business leaders and folks here about 4 weeks ago, for the summit, which is broadcast live from Willow Creek. We hosted it here. We're going to be doing it again next year. But also, instead of waiting a year, we're going to be doing more intentional things to be a part or to continue the conversation. And on October the 19th, we're going to be having one such conversation where we're having a guy from Texas. His name is Jay Papasan. He's an executive at one of the largest real estate companies in the world. They are very committed to personal development and empowering people in leadership, training extraordinarily well. But also, they're very concerned about the faith. and how they live out their faith within the context of their business. And so we're going to be talking about this, and I'm going to be a part of this, talking about both productivity and sort of our character and how those two things work together in terms of really allowing God to use us right where we are. So I hope that you will consider being a part of this. There's a website you can visit, our website, portcitychurch.org/one thing. And if you put in the code PC3 on this when you register, it's free for anybody who attends our church. Our goal isn't just to go, let's create a platform, but to continue a conversation about how you and I can leverage our leadership for the sake of other people and ultimately for the image of God to come to bear in the world around us, which our world so desperately needs. So this is going to be one part of a continuing conversation over the next few weeks and over the course of this year as we seek to leverage our influence to make a difference. One other way you're going to hear more about next week. But in case you're unaware of this, Wilmington, North Carolina was named the number one city in America for opioid abuse. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. You've seen it all over the news. The interesting thing about this is we've been working on this for really a significant length of time, but really intensely for about 2 years, long before it was all over the headlines in the news. And so next week we're going to be sharing with you our journey, but here's what's so important about this. It's not just about our journey, but what's happened as law enforcement, the medical community, and the mental health community have all gotten together, they've invited our church to be a part of the conversation, not only be a part of the conversation, but to be a part of leading the conversation, how to make a difference and how to address these issues in ways that other things are found. This is such an incredible opportunity for the church, and this is how we leverage our influence. It's not some, hey, look what we're doing. It's just a subversive, organic way in which we've just been in the right place at the right time, and I say that because I think God does that with the right people granting us influence where they've been coming to us. This is such a huge opportunity. This is why we want to make sure and pay attention to the influence we've been given as a church and also the influence you've been given as an individual. And that's what I want to address, is sort of how we do this over the next week. So those are two opportunities that are available that I think are going to be really powerful for us. Now, the passage that we've been looking at, Ephesians 3, and we're going to look a little bit beyond it, but it says that what Paul concludes with, he says, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more, to him who is able to accomplish immeasurably more than all that we ask or think or imagine. To him be the glory in the church and in the generations to come. And that's the idea that Paul urges us to lead a life worthy of the call. Because he's promised to accomplish more than we can imagine. And a lot of us get so fixated on what we can imagine or can't imagine, we forget about these other two words. It says he is able to accomplish. That leadership, your leadership, my influence, our responsibility, it requires results. I'm not talking about this idea that, hey, everybody's leading somebody somewhere and just do what you can where you are so you can go, well, I did what I could and that's all I could do and so I can't really worry about the rest. And you can't really worry about the rest except you have to worry about the rest. Results matter. We're talking about the impact that you make on other people. It's not enough just to have good intentions. You want to have some vision or understanding of the results that we're after. How do we leverage this effectively? And that's what I want to talk about today. One of my favorite leadership adages says that he that thinketh he leadeth, but has no one following, is merely taking a walk. Okay? There's a lot of people who do that. You sort of have platforms or you have all this stuff, and then you look behind you, there's really nobody taking you seriously. And that's what we want to make sure. It's not just about you or me thinking about something. It's about us looking back and saying, what is in our wake? What is happening to the world around us because we put our hands to work according to the call that God has given us? What is left behind us in terms of the people that have looked to us and entrusted us with their leadership? And that's what I want for you to everybody to take that seriously. It happens in our classrooms. It happens in our families. It happens in our organizations. It happens in our schools. Some of you guys are high school, middle school kids. Some of your older brothers, older sisters. People behind you are looking to you for some form of influence. Who can I trust to be like? And that's what this series started. If you weren't here last few weeks, that's what we've been talking about. And we've been saying this idea that this mindset is that you don't have to be somewhere else and you don't have to be someone else, but you do have to take seriously who you are and where you are. And so what I did last week, we drew this sort of graph, this grid. And we talked about this horizontal line, for those of you who are in current math classes, this is the x-axis. And we took this and we said, this is basically our response or our the way in which we live out our lives with people. This is toward others right here. And on one side, we sit over here. This is the idea of love. This is where we give ourselves for other people, right? If you were here last week, we talked about the idea of blessing people by giving of our souls to them. Do you remember this, right? I was traveling this week, I was on an airplane, the guy next to me sneezed. And I turned around, I took his head in my hands, and I said, may the Lord bless you. And I didn't do that, I'm just kidding. So if you were not here last week, you have no idea what I'm talking about. You need to go pay attention to that because it's really important that we understand what it looks like to give ourselves to others. And this is one of the ways in which we can live. The other part of this axis is the idea of indifference. And this is where we just really don't know and don't care. One side is love. This is, we want to give ourselves to others. The other side says, well, if I can do something about it, I will. But if I can't, I'm not really going to go out of my way to do anything about it. And that's this axis that we talked about last week. Now, we all kind of rated ourselves. And then what we said is there's another axis, the y-axis, that's very important. And this is, so if this is the way we respond or interact with other people, this is really the way we respond or interact with God. It's interesting, when Jesus was asked to sum up all of the commands, he said, they actually said, Jesus, what's your favorite command? You said, what's my favorite command? He said, my favorite command is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And what he was basically saying, he says, there's a sense in which we leverage our lives on behalf of others, and then there's a sense in which we leverage or live our lives according to this idea of what we will call up here God's image, God's glory, God's will, God's way. It has to do with how he is seen and represented in the world. And then down here, we have our own self-will, our own self-image, our own way in which we want to get things done. And this is the axis. One says that this is how we move and interact with others, and this is how whose will we are most concerned with. Now, what's interesting to me, oftentimes we think about what compels us to love other people. Like, what compels you to love another person? It's interesting, I do a lot of weddings, or used to do a lot of weddings. I don't do as many anymore. But I always ask the same question. And I'll ask the guy and ask the girl, I'll say, why do you love this person? Especially on their wedding day, right? You're sitting right there in front of everybody. Why do you love this person? They're like, because she's beautiful and she's sweet. And I'm like, she's not going to be that way forever. And I ask her, I said, why do you love him? Because he's so handsome and he's so, he's not going to be like that forever. Do you know how much pressure you have just put on her to go, I love you as long as you're sweet and beautiful. But as soon as you're not sweet and beautiful, you may not be loved. And so most of us, we live our lives just purely on this plane, and we look to love others based on whether or not they deserve our love. How many of you know someone that does not deserve your love that you're nice to anyway? But there's a few of us. But when we look around, what happens? What happens when you give yourself to them and they don't respond? Which direction do you typically move? Back here. It's like, well, I'm just not going to bother anymore. And so the question becomes, where is the source for your love? You see, this line right here, this vertical line, really is a source line, moving in one direction or the other. And this axis here is really a response line, moving in one direction or another. And what you are responding to has a source. The further you get down here, consumed with yourself, and you realize that you're going to love people based on their capacity to deserve or earn or keep your love, you're always going to be vacillating back in this direction all the time. They'll be nice, and you'll move in this direction. They won't be nice because there's no source. When Jesus said to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, what he was saying is we've got to position ourselves to so be loved by him. Right? We love because he first loved us. That's how this gets played out in the New Testament. That we have to have a source. And really what happens is when you understand or come to understand how deeply you are loved by God, and you trust and you receive that, the only thing you have to do is just give that to other people. And I'll tell you, that is the most free way in which you can live, because you don't need anything from anybody else. When you get to that place where you don't need anything from anybody else, you are free to influence them in ways that you never imagined you could. That's what I want to look at. See, we taught this last week, and I'm going to kind of review this. We said if you get up in this direction, you love God's image, and you love the things of God, and you love trivia about God, and you love going deeper, and the more you get up here and the more indifferent you become to others, the more likely you are to become judgmental. And we know people like this. That's the direction that this goes in this direction. For some of us, we're here and we look at the world and we go, oh my gosh, there's so much need. And we begin to pull back and say, what could I do to make a difference? I don't see any possible way in which I could help anybody else. And we're moving in this direction. Or for some of you, something happens in your life. You have problems with your temper, or maybe you're just not as perfect as you want to be. And so what you have is you have issues of worth that you don't think that God could use you, or that you don't have anything to offer. You feel inadequate. And what's happening to you is you're beginning to drift in this direction. And we sort of put ourselves, and all of us have been here. How many of you have ever felt so overwhelmed by the needs of the world that you just thought it would be easier just to hole up into your own little world and just take care of you? Anybody felt like that? How many of you ever felt like you just didn't have enough to offer God, that you weren't good enough or worthy enough, you didn't know enough, weren't smart enough? How many of you felt like that? How many of you have ever looked at another person and thought, they actually don't deserve anything from me? Anybody besides me ever been really judgmental of another person? We've all felt like this. And what happens? We what drives us down, and eventually we're like, well, I'll just try to do my own thing. And before we know it, we become indifferent to others. And back here, we start making ourselves a victim. The whole world is out to get me. I just got to take care of myself. I can't trust anybody. And we just live down in this corner. Or over here, we talked about this idea that this one over here was the idea of manipulation. What's in this corner is manipulation. This is when you are trying to influence people in order to get your way. And this is not, it's not always that you're doing bad things. They're just selfish things. Sometimes you've provided jobs for people. Sometimes you've done a lot of things to build a kingdom for yourself. And you look around and you realize, what have I done this for? You see, when you, I've talked to so many people who are in this, they get in this situation, they've built their entire lives. They've done so many great things to make a name for themselves, only to realize that this really was never about me or should have never been about me. And there's nothing left there. It's interesting what Jesus says. What does it profit if a man gains the whole world? You know what it says next? And loses his soul. What we think of, especially if you grew up in certain denominations, right? You think of gain the whole world, lose your soul, means you're going to hell. I think losing your soul happens a lot sooner than that. I think there are a lot of people who have worked so hard to gain the whole world and would describe themselves as, I don't know who I've become, which is the definition of lost. A soul that is lost is a soul that has no orientation to what it was created or made to be. So that's the idea here. And a lot of us, we get this, and the solution to this isn't to find people who are easier to love, because they're going to wear you out. You're just going to be back and forth on this line. You're going to be like, oh, I can get what I want. This is really good. And some of you live in relationships that are good relationships, but they're basically exchange relationships. As long as that person does their end of the bargain and you do your end of the bargain, everything is good. We call this win-win. And what we always do is we always use kind of negotiations to make sure that we're in win-win situations. Some of your marriages are like that. Like, as long as she's good, I'm good. And you're always working to make sure the other, you know, it's just, there's a different way to live. There's a different way to live. You see, when I began to think about this, and I want to ask you this question, I want you to think about a person in your life who said something to you, who spoke something into your life, and you recall that as being the first time that someone ever really believed in you or saw something in you that you didn't see in yourself. I remember the first person who told me, I was a youth minister for a long time, and I love speaking to kids. And the great thing about speaking to high school and middle school kids is when you're 23, 24 years old, 28 years old, 29 years old, is at least you've been where they are. Right? When we started Port City Church, I was 29 years old. And when adults started coming, I was like, I don't know where they are. I remember the first person who told me, says, Mike, I think you can do this in front of adults. I was like, no, I don't know enough. I'm not smart. I did all of these things. And at some point, he said, you've got to take a risk and trust that God has called you to something that you can't yet see or believe. You got to trust that God has actually called you. At some point, you can play all the games about your inadequacies and about the fact you don't finish sentences and you talk too fast and all the other things. We have a group right now that is translating real time for me in Spanish. They are heroes, right? I mean, can you imagine that? So they're up there in the room. Thank y'all so much. So I talk too fast. I don't finish sentences. I have attention problems. Like all the excuses. And someone's had to say, Mike, I urge you to lead a life worthy of the manner of the call that you've been given. I remember, and maybe you have moments like that in your life where someone believed in you for the first time. I remember my youth pastor wrote me a letter when I was in high school. And I was trying to decide whether to go into architecture. And he wrote me a letter and he said, Mike, he said, there won't be a single building in the world that goes unbuilt because you walk away from architecture. Thank you for the encouragement, Bill, right? He said, but what if you took a chance and invested your life in people, if you built people? I was 17 years old. A couple years later, I get into college. I'm in an architecture school and I'm working at Chick-fil-A. And there, yeah, whew, Chick-fil-A. Now, see, now everybody's day's ruined because they're closed. But I worked at Chick-fil-A, and I loved Chick-fil-A. In fact, I will tell you, if you work or manage or own a fast food restaurant, you have one of the most profound platforms to make such a difference in the world because you hire 16 and 17-year-olds. You give them a job. You give them a sense of value. You give them a paycheck. You give them a sense of dignity. You have influence in their lives like you cannot even imagine. I'm so grateful that my bosses at Chick-fil-A took their platform seriously because I was there just like anything else. We were making $3.35 an hour. I think you go to jail for that now. I was making $3.35 an hour, and we were there working and working, and my boss, two of the bosses that were there, one of them, his name was Tim Yancey, and I didn't know this at the time, but it was a corporately owned store. It's called a dwarf house, and so we worked there. I'd been there several years. I was probably 19 years old. I was a sophomore, junior in college, but this time, and I wanted to be an architect. That's what I was starting to get locked in on, and I was kind of full of myself, and I was just there to get the scholarship at Chick-fil-A, and I was, you know, being a supervisor. We had fun, but I wanted to be the cool kid. I didn't really care. I just was all about me, just like most kids are. I remember one night, we had this ice cream machine. It's called Ice Dream. If that's what Chick-fil-A, they don't have ice cream. They have Ice Dream at Chick-fil-A, and there's this little plate that takes the milk that runs over and it drains out and then it is able to be disposed of at the end of every night. Well, evidently this drain had gotten clogged somewhere along the way and no one really noticed for quite some time. And you can imagine what happens when you walked by and this drain full of overrun ice cream mix, milk, had been sitting for quite a time. You're like, whew, it started to smell. And so we closed our restaurant. Our restaurant closed at midnight, 12 o'clock, and oftentimes we'd be there till 1 or 1:30 closing, cleaning up. And Tim Yancey came to me and he said, hey, Mike, will you stay after and help me? I got a project for you. And I said, sure, I'll do that. Now, I didn't know that Tim, I just thought of him as my manager at Chick-fil-A. This is a corporate owned store. Tim was actually a vice president at the corporate headquarters. He was a big wig. Didn't know that. I said, sure. So we get by there, we pull out, and not only had this ice cream thing stopped and filled up, it had run over and spilled out into all, and it was just hard, sticky milk all the way down. It was nastier than you think. And so he and I, about 2 a.m, sat there with these spatulas, and we scraped off spoiled milk and cleaned this thing up. And I remember just thinking that he was there with me, and we were talking about this, and he asked me a couple things. I learned two things from him. One is, if you want to get to know somebody, you got to get to where they are. And that's what we were doing. We were there scraping milk together. And that you're never too big. If I was the vice president of a company, I would have never done it. I said, you do that, and I'll sit here and watch you, or some version of that. But he was there with me. And he said to me that night, he said, Mike, I think you have a lot of leadership ability. And you can keep doing your thing, or perhaps you can start to pay attention to people around you and how God might use you to make a difference. Now, I didn't go home and stopped going to architecture school and these things, it was years and years and years of that question just rolling around in my head and my heart, trying to figure out if there was any truth to that. There were times when you doubt yourself and you're like, I don't know if I can do this. And you draw that to mind that someone somewhere saw this in me and said, I think this might be you. Those words are powerful. Who's the first person to tell you that? Maybe a better question to ask is, who's the first person you've ever told that to? Do you have people in your life that you've looked at and seen something in them and went to them and said, let me call this out of you? You see, when we begin to incline ourselves in this direction, what we're talking about is two things. We're talking about the influence or the impact or the integrity of God's image. How is he seen in our lives? And we're talking about the influence of his love on other people. In fact, Paul, who is arguably the most influential human being in the history of the world, his writings have impacted more people in the world than anybody else's writings, Paul. So Paul understood influence to some degree. And he writes about this in Ephesians 3 is basically, I think, his treatise on how to leverage your influence. And there are four things that I wrote down in my journal. And I'm going to read this passage and tell you what we're going to do. In Ephesians chapter 3, the whole thing, basically there are four components. That one is influence is given. If people look to you, it's not because you've done anything. It's because you've been given something. It's not because you've just been handed something that you didn't necessarily deserve. You're an older brother and that you just got to be that, or older sister, you just got to be that. You're in a position where you happen to be looked to for expertise because you just were given that. Influence is always given. Anytime someone trusts you with their time, with their attention, with following you, with imitating you, it is a gift that you've been given, and don't ever take advantage of it. Number two, influence has a goal. We're not indifferent or arbitrary in terms of where we're taking people. And this is part of the problem. We go, well, you know, I'm just doing my thing and if people follow me, I hope. It's not, it's got to be more intentional. There's a goal to this. Number three, it also has a result. There's accountability for how things turn out in this. I hear parents talking about their kids going, I'm just gonna give them a lot of options and hope they turn out okay. The culture is going to eat them alive. You cannot be indifferent. There's got to be a clear goal and vision of what we are doing. We talked to the college students, had a big lunch last week at the college students. I'm speaking at Overflow this Tuesday night. And make no mistake about you, I tell you, we want to be one of the most prominent voices of influence in their lives during those 4 years. It is unapologetic. We want to be a prominent voice of influence because very few other influences are going to be as helpful in terms of who they become. They might tell them what they need to do. They may have a lot of things, but who they become, there's almost nothing else that's going to be as powerful as the voices that come from the people who love them like our ministry leaders do and like we do as a church. And that's sort of free, but I just want you to understand how serious we are about leveraging our influence. Paul goes on, he says, it has a result and it has a responsibility. That you cannot be indifferent because you feel inadequate. Or you can't be indifferent because you don't feel worthy. You can't be indifferent because, for any reason, if people follow you, you have a responsibility to leverage that influence. Well, it's the thing that probably haunted me more than anything else when all these people started showing up at our church. And I thought, what have we done? That's what I thought. I drove up on the campus. I thought, what have we done? I don't know what to do with all these people. That's a good place to be. Let me tell you why. Because when you don't know what to do, you get really, really concerned about finding out the answer. Now, this is exactly what Paul did. Listen to this. All these things. Verse 14, for this reason, I kneel before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name. Because I've been given this influence, and I'm not really sure the full extent or how to use it, I'm going to get on my knees. I'm going to ask the one who's given it to me. When's the last time you stopped and prayed for the people who follow you? And I don't mean just pray for God to bless them. He's going to bless them through you. But maybe think about how are you going to bless them? What are you praying for them? What do you want for them? What do you wish they got? See, if you're going, I wish the people who follow me would just do their dadgum job, right? We get that way. But what would it be like? Listen to what Paul does. Paul says, I pray that out of the glorious riches, this source of God's love, that he would strengthen you who are looking to me for leadership. I want him to strengthen you with power through your spirit in the very core of who he or she is, so that Christ will dwell in their hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all of God's people. And look at this. All the things you could have prayed for. He said, what I hope is that you'll grasp how wide and how long and how high and how deep is the love of Christ. Of all the things he could pray, he said, I hope they'll get how much they are loved by God and how powerful his work is in them. To know this love that surpasses our knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all fullness of God. And he talks about this idea that one thing, when we begin to comprehend God's love for us, we experience the fullness of life. Do you know this is what every single human being wants? Everybody wants to get to the end and say, I had a full life. Every attempt anywhere on this graph is an attempt for this. If you're trying to build your kingdom, it's because you want to be full. If you're terrified to do anything, it's because you want to be full. I wrote this out of my journal. I said, we are motivated by fullness in three ways. Number one, the fullness from satisfaction. And you can do that over here for a little while. You can be really satisfied over here and operate, but at some point you're going to get to the end and realize this was not about you. At some point that's going to happen. We live from fullness, are driven from fullness because of fullness of satisfaction. Sometimes we just feel so good. We're like, oh, this is so good. I just want to give my, I just want to, ooh, this is so good. Some of you are driven by the fullness of emptiness. You're so despondent and so full of despair or fear that you are somewhere on here and it's driving your life in the direction that it's going. The drive is always for fullness. And what we learn is that when we begin to comprehend, interestingly enough, begin to comprehend how long and how wide and how deep and how high the love of Christ is, it's probably going to take a few hundred thousand years, which is why eternity is kind of cool. And then the next thing he says, now, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all that we ask or think or imagine, to him be this glory, right? This glory, this power that is at work within us. To him be the glory in his church, in all generations, forever and ever. Amen. So in my journal, I said there's two things that happen up here. Number one is we get a fullness of life. And number two is we get the power of God. We get on our knees and we say, God, can you help me know what to do? You see, a lot of us, a lot of you, you have stuff that has to get done. I get it. We have stuff that has to get done all the time, lots of stuff. You have stuff that has to get done. You have people that you have to depend on to get that stuff done. And you have to lead them and empower them and entrust them in order to do the task well so that at the end of the day, all these things work together to get your to-do list done. That's what leadership is about. I get that. But I think there's something else we need to pay attention to, because what I'm concerned about when it comes to us, when it comes to thinking about making disciples, not as a program of the church, but making disciples as a way in which the church impacts the world. It's not just about what you accomplish in your job or in your career. It's the way in which you accomplish it. It's how are people because they followed you. When people follow you, where do they end up? That's what we're trying to get at. Are people, do people somehow experience the integrity of God's image? That, man, this must be what God looks like. And man, this is the influence of his love. I am moved deeper and differently because I follow you than anybody else I've ever followed. This is what people are talking about. It's being able to look and give ourselves to another human being. In fact, I'm one of the speakers at the Global Leadership Summit 4 weeks ago. was a guy named Marcus Lemonis. And some of you may know who he is. He's on the show, The Prophet. It's a reality show where he goes in and turns businesses around The Prophet. He was one of the speakers. And he's a little brash, and he was a little brash. But one of the things he did was so powerful. To set the context, there's about 8,000 people in the room where he's speaking. And then that message is broadcast out to, I think, 650 other sites that encompass about another 155 or 160,000 people. This thing is huge. And so Marcus Lemonis is talking to this group in the room, and he's talking to the folks out in video world. And he calls a guy up on stage for an illustration. He calls him up on the stage. The guy comes up there and he says, "I want for you to tell me something that no one else knows about you," in front of 160,000 people. Imagine if I called you up here and said, "Hey, why don't you come up here and tell me something that no one else knows about you?" You're going to be thinking of a lie really, really quick, because there's no way you're going to do that. And this guy, I think he was from another part of the world, and he looks up to Marcus Lemonis and he says, "When I was a teenager, I was in a really bad bus crash, and everybody on the bus died except me," in front of 160,000 people. And we were all like, we did just what you do, like, oh. And I could feel like tears come to my eyes. And he said, "I felt such guilt and such shame that I was the only survivor." And then Marcus Lemonis turned around and said, "How many of you guys just connected with him?" And everybody's like, "Yeah, that's what you felt." What is that? It's when we give of ourselves to another person. We connect with them. We don't need anything from them. We're free from all of this down here, and we are free to do this up here. That's the picture. You see, we talk about a win-win situation. And what we think is that a win-win situation is how we craft and negotiate to make sure that I get my way and you get your way. A win-win might just be two people in the same quadrant. One of the things that Jesus said that almost everybody believes, in fact, I've never really met anybody that didn't believe this. Jesus said, "It is more blessed," everybody know this, "to give than it is to receive." Everybody goes, "Yes, yes, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive." Even people who don't believe in Jesus think that's a good thing. Yep, you're right, it is. "I always feel better when I do something for other people." Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? Because we're afraid that when we give ourselves, we might not find, something might diminish. Until we really become committed to thinking of ourselves that we are free to give yourself. See, a win-win situation isn't about your crafty negotiation. A win-win situation is about you believing that it truly is better to give yourself for the sake of another person. You realize the world has no answer to love? It's a very interesting thing. It's different than any other force in the universe. And it's the way in which God has called us to lead. Do you love the people that are around you? Not because they deserve it, because they don't. Right? We know that. Two questions I want to leave you with. Then you can go to lunch anywhere except Chick-fil-A. Question number one. What do you need from the people around you? In other words, what's required? You have kids. You lead them. They got to go to school. They got to make good grades. They got to get into the right colleges. They got to get good jobs. They got to be self-sufficient by the time they're like 30. Hopefully earlier. What do you need from them? What do you need from the employees that look to you, that answer to you? You need for them to be on time. You need for them to accomplish certain projects. You need for them to uphold certain values. What do you need from them? You know what they need. What do you need? You got to have a very clear list. It can't be just do your job. You got to have a clear list of what do they need. But more than that, what could they become? Have you gotten too busy to give any thought to what the person who works for you could become? It's happened to me. It's like, I know you want to do this for the rest of your life, but I don't have time to think about it. Just do your job. What could they become? What if you spent time saying, for this reason, I'm going to get on my knees and say, God, let them behold and let me be an instrument, a tool in that process. Because you know what Paul's next statement was after he says, I want them to understand God's love. I want all the fullness of life. He said, that's why I urge you to lead your life in a manner worthy of the call that you've been given, because that's what you get to do when you lead. Who around you needs to hear something from you about what you believe about them or for them or see in them? As a teacher, some of you are heroes in the classroom because that's what you see. You realize you're fast food restaurants. These kids are in, you're at an employment, you employ people. If you're a business leader, you have one of the best platforms to do this more than anybody else. But you've got to have an as you go mindset. You can't just build a culture, and we see this happening in your business. It's all about the employees. So the employees find their commitment to you because of what you do for them. That is short-lived because we were not made to be getters. It is more blessed to give than it's to receive. Until you learn to give yourself away and teach other people to do it, they will never experience the fullness of life they were intended to. This is exactly what love does. And it is from this place or in this place. You may never get a big platform. You may never have some plaque on a wall or some building named after you. But what will happen is in 15 or 20 years, someone will use your name to talk about the first time someone believed in them. And the trajectory of their entire life is different because they followed you. And more importantly, perhaps their faith in Christ will be what drives everything else, because they understood the way you loved them wasn't about you or about them, but it was about the glory, the image, the will, the way of the one who had created them anyway. That's what we get to do. Let's pray together. Father, thank you. Thank you for the opportunities that you give us all around. God, we confess that we are so prone to slip into our world, our will, our way. And it happens, it'll happen in the parking lot because traffic's bad. It'll happen at the restaurant because the line's long. And somehow you continue to work in us, and that your power be real in us, and that we might begin to see ourselves from the perspective of being loved. And in doing so, see everybody else through the same lens. God, for those who are here and there's been a name that's been brought to their mind because your spirit prompted that, they need to go tell someone or have a conversation with someone or affirm somebody. God, I ask that you would do that, that you would give them courage, urge them to lead a life worthy of the manner, of the call that you've given them. God, that would be for all of us every single day as we go. And I ask all of this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.